opinions expressed on this program are those of the host and do not reflect those of KVOR, Cumulus Media, or its advertisers.
I'm American made, but life serving lay. My mama taught me wrong from right. I was born in the South. Sometimes I have a big mouth when I see something that I don't like. I gotta say it.
And I'm Michelle Morin here on AM 740 KVOR to tell you what big media won't. Oh, the GOP. They just keep spiraling down, down, down. I've got some election-related information to share with you tonight. It is not election season, but this is something, if you're here in Colorado, you really need to know this. If you are a conservative and you are a Republican, you need to stay tuned in for the next few segments at the least. I'm going to share with you something that should infuriate you and hopefully influence you to take some ownership of our republic, which is ailing at best. It's ailing at best. It's no secret that the national level GOP, our representatives in Congress and our senators, are by and large failing us. They own the place. They own DC. We've got a majority GOP Senate, majority GOP House, GOP President, and the president came in with a vision for which we elected him. He said he's going to build a wall. He's going to reform the tax system and lower taxes on you and me. He said that he would repeal Obamacare. Now, he actually, you know, kind of joined in with the repeal and replace mantra, which was a mistake. But nonetheless, he did pick up that song and run with it. And you and I put him in office. We put a majority GOP in office, and they have squandered it. They have completely squandered it. No secret. No secret. And I know that you share the same frustrations that I do with them. We've got John McCain, McConnell, Senator McConnell was waiting for John McCain to come back from his doctor's appointment so that they could take a vote on it wasn't a repeal bill of Obamacare. It was a move the chairs around on the deck of the Titanic change to Obamacare. And turned out that Senator McCain ended up getting diagnosed with brain cancer. He's coming back anyway, and he was heard saying things like, yeah, we'll see how easy it is for Trump to make America great again, palling around with Schumer. In fact, one of the articles I was going to highlight tonight was the fact that it looks like Senator McCain is going to try to rebirth the pro-amnesty Gang of Eight movement. Remember, that was a move back several years ago where, led by Republicans, the Gang of Eight, the heroes, always led by John McCain, were going to save the day and bring amnesty to the table for illegals. And I'll go into that in a little bit more detail later. There's going to be enough to get fired up about tonight. That's just starting to appear on the horizon. We're going to talk a little bit more locally, though. I have a lot of experience in the county, El Paso County GOP and state GOP from years back. I'm going to share that with you and try to enlighten you on how things have become what they are. And this very important vote that's going to take place, I believe it's next Friday. And if anyone's listening and you are in the GOP, and even if you're just registered GOP, it doesn't really matter to me. If you're unaffiliated, you can call me too. It doesn't much matter to me. My number here is 719-540-0740. And I want to take us back to last year's election, and there was a proposition on the ballot called Proposition 108. And unfortunately, against the conservative ideals It was voted into our constitution, our state constitution. What this did was basically took power. It completely stripped power away from you and me as registered GOP to choose our own candidates for elections, and it turned the power over to anybody. Unaffiliated can now vote in a Republican primary and pick our candidates for elections, everything but president. So I'm going to explain that a little bit more to you. But before I get into that, something very interesting came up on my screen this week. I found out that a Republican donor from Virginia Beach has just now sued the GOP. This, I'm not a person who appreciates lawsuits very much at all. Our society is way too litigious. The justice system is overburdened with petty, trivial issues, vengeance issues, people trying to profit from someone, you know, gain from someone else's loss. It's just, I hate lawsuits, to be completely honest. In this case, I'm thinking I'm supportive of this. There's a retired attorney. He lives in Virginia Beach. His name is Bob Hegman. He's 70 years old. On Thursday, he filed a lawsuit in the U.S. District Court saying that the National and Virginia Republican parties and some GOP leaders raised millions of dollars in campaign funds knowing they weren't going to be able to overturn Obamacare. He wrote that the GOP has been engaged in a pattern of racketeering, which involves massive fraud perpetrated on Republican voters and contributors, as well as some independents and Democrats. The lawsuit lists as defendants the RNC, the Republican National Committee, and Virginia's two national GOP committee members. Their names are Morton Blackwell and Cynthia Dunbar, as well as the Republican Party of Virginia and the state party chairman, John Whitbeck. I'm curious your thoughts on this, because I'm feeling right this moment, without putting a lot of thought into it, I'm infuriated at this party. I'm still a registered Republican. I have flirted with the idea of abandoning this party for quite some time. Haven't made that leap yet. I do not make impulsive decisions. That's really what it is. But the party is not representative of our Republican values, representative ideas. The whole electoral college that we have in place, it is completely, that is the idea of a constitutional republic where the majority can never overrule or never rule the minority. And I'm going to explain how that works in the Colorado election system. But your thoughts on this lawsuit, but more pertinent and more urgent is Proposition 108. Unfortunately, we Coloradans passed that. I did not vote for it. But there are two basic points to the law. Number one, it changes the primary election process in Colorado. It allows unaffiliated voters to vote in non-presidential primary elections. Okay, so that means that when we have our Republican primaries in June, that anyone can come vote and taint who we pick. So you, the GOP voter, really don't count anymore. Now you have to open up your big tent and let everybody in to pick the candidate that they want. Therefore, doesn't that just neuter the Republican Party? It does. Well, here's the second part of the law. It allows political parties to opt out of holding a primary election and instead choose to nominate candidates by assembly or convention. That's a huge point. Huge. And I'm going to explain why. Because when I was more of an activist, this is what I was educating people to get out and do. I was telling everyone I could talk to get involved in the GOP caucus so that we, the people, could choose our candidates and that the establishment leftists in the party could not. This is going to go up for a vote next Friday, and it's looking like our GOP chairman, State Chairman Jeff Hayes, and the Central Committee are not going to vote for this. And I want to know your thoughts on it. I'm going to explain it more in detail when we come back. Explain why this is something you need to know about. And we need to work together on how to fix this very corrupted, broken party that's supposed to be protecting our republic. More on this when we get back.
The things big media won't tell you with Michelle Marin on AM 740 KVOR.
All right. In the spirit of our GOP not being who they are, here's just a movie clip that I found over the weekend, and it struck me as very, very relevant.
Who the heck are you?
What are you talking about? I'm Santa Claus.
No, you're not.
Why, of course I am.
Okay. If you've seen the movie Elf, it's a movie that my family and I watch probably four times per Christmas, but there's a scene where there's a fake Santa in the toy department of the big department store, and Elf knows the real Santa because he's come down from the North Pole, and he goes and confronts this fake Santa. You know, who the heck are you? And it goes on into Elf exposing him as a fake. He's a total fake. And it turns into this big fight between the two. It totally reminded me of what's going on in our GOP. And we've got to come up with something, my friends. It's up to you and me to, in a republic, in a constitutional republic, it's up to you and me to turn the ship around, because this is a representative type of situation. So what's going to happen on Friday is our state GOP has what's called a central committee. And the central committee is people who are going to, you know, they're from all over the state. I think they're all county chairs, state chair, bonus members. They're all people who've been elected at the local caucus system and within the party to make big decisions about the direction of the state GOP. And there's a guy from Adams County. His name is Ben Nicholas. And I got this from Denver Post. Ben Nicholas is a central committee member, and he's saying that our caucus system is the only way to pick a candidate who's going to adhere to our conservative principles. So he got a petition going that would basically force a vote within our GOP central committee. What's the vote going to be about? The vote is, shall the GOP hold a primary in June and let unaffiliated voters pick our candidates who aren't the president, anyone who's not a president, or shall we go back to the caucus system and not have a primary? Should we go back to the caucus system and let you and I pick who we want to be our GOP candidates in all the elections from, you know, local up to state? And it's where we pick the governor. It's where we pick our state lawmakers and a handful of others. And this is a huge, huge battle within the GOP. And the general public, I am concerned, doesn't really know about it. And I'm concerned that's one reason why this proposition got passed. But this coming Friday, we will find out if our state GOP is going to give you and me the choice to choose who we want to be our GOP candidates in upcoming elections this time around, or if they're going to allow the unaffiliated to come in to pick our GOP candidates. The state chair is Jeff Hayes, and according to the Denver Post, Hayes strongly opposes canceling the primary and expects it to fail, but he calls this vote the right thing to do. And I would like to know why he opposes canceling the primary and why he's expecting this to fail. Why would our central committee not want to let you and me, registered GOP, who go to our caucus, go to our precinct every other year to pick our own candidates? I want to know why. Jeff Hayes says, we have a certain percentage of our central committee that wants it to be under the party's purview for how we decide to get our candidates on the ballot. They don't necessarily like the idea of unaffiliated voters being able to select their candidates or the party's nominee, but it's a small percentage. That's our chairman, Jeff Hayes, quoted in the Denver Post. And what he's talking about is a certain percentage, a small percentage of the Central Committee that wants to let you and me decide who our GOP candidates are. And it's more the statement, as I'm reading it, and with my experience with Mr. Hayes, is he doesn't like that small percentage because they're a roadblock to the GOP establishment keeping control of what's going on. And there was even input from another GOP chairman. His name's Jake Viano. He's a Denver GOP chairman. He's saying it's political suicide for the Republican Party to opt out of a primary. It would be used as a bludgeon against us by the liberals and spun to say the GOP is not interested in the will of the people and is not interested in democracy and wants to simply do what they want to do. The only way that opting out would work is if it were done by both parties. That's from the Denver GOP chairman. And why is our GOP telling you and me that we want the will of the people in a democracy when that's not what we stand for? Democracy is what Democrats stand for. Our founding fathers hated democracy. They called it a mobocracy. And our own GOP is telling us that we need to be interested in a democracy. And that if we opt out of the primaries, it would be used as a bludgeon against us? I don't think so. I don't think so at all. I'm curious what you all think about this. Do you want unaffiliated voting in our primary and picking our candidates? Or do you want to see the Central Committee cancel the primary next year and allow us, you and me, to go to caucus and select the representatives that we choose and not have some unaffiliated big tent people coming in? Why would we do that? So this is a mess. I don't know if you knew this either, but the cost of a primary increases state spending by $160,000. It's a one-time cost to make information technology system modifications, but local spending, $750,000 per county, requiring that ballots be mailed to the unaffiliated voters and eliminating the required notification currently sent to unaffiliated voters prior to a primary election. So, our state GOP, our chairman, Jeff Hayes, has already said, well, we're going to go ahead and go with the primaries, but this is the cost. The cost is you and I are going to lose our voice in our own party if this is what our GOP Central Committee does to us, and we are going to end up footing the bill, $750,000 every county, every election, so that we can inform the unaffiliated voters that they can come vote in our primary. This is completely against what we stand for. It's an outrage. The caucus system is the truest way to get people elected that reflect what you and I believe. It's the truest way to get rid of the John McCains. It's the truest way to get rid of the fakes and the rhinos that are ruling the GOP and ignoring everything that's constitutional about what we stand for. I'm curious, you know, this guy who filed the lawsuit, I'm wondering if there are going to be other folks who start filing these lawsuits. The racketeering charges are, I don't know if that's going to stand up in court, but something has to be done to get these guys' attention. So back to Virginia Beach, the guy who filed the lawsuit, he said it's pretty clear that the president was reelected. Obamacare is the law of the... I'm sorry, this is... he said in making this statement, Speaker Boehner... He was quoting Speaker Boehner. And Speaker Boehner said, it's pretty clear that the president was reelected. Obamacare is the law of the land. This was back in 2012. And so Boehner... the lawsuit says that Boehner basically said... Well, Obamacare is the law of the land, but everybody's going to campaign against it anyway. So that's what the lawsuit is. He's saying in making the statement, Speaker Boehner was sending a message to House Republicans and others that repeal was just not going to happen. He was trying to put the issue to rest. Nevertheless, the Republican Party continued to use the mails, wires, and interstate commerce to solicit donations and votes to secure House and Senate majorities and ultimately the presidency. Now that the Republican Party has won the House, the Senate, and the presidency, the effort it is making to repeal and replace Obamacare is itself a fraud upon Republican voters and donors. Curious how this lawsuit holds up. Not sure if racketeering can apply to politics, but it would sure be an interesting jolt to the GOP if they were held accountable. Money talks if they're held accountable for not doing what they promised to do. All right, I want your thoughts on this when we come back. Professional cuddling is booming under Trump. What's professional cuddling? I'll tell you when we come back. And the GOP Senate is preventing Trump from doing recess appointments. Why on earth are they doing that? We'll find out more when we come back.
You're listening to Michelle Morin on AM 740 KVOR.
I'm back. I'm telling you what big media won't here on AM 740. And we were talking about the GOP, how here in Colorado, our state party is going to take a vote this coming Friday. If I read the article correctly, I have not spoken to anyone within the party yet, as I only found out about this today. If anyone who actually is working in the party or is who is a central committee member, any of you bonus members or county chairs out there listening, give us a call. Give me a call, 719-540-0740. I want to hear your take on it if you're happening to listen. You might not want to call because maybe you're going to vote for the primary process. And I would love for you to call if you support unaffiliated voting in the GOP primary process. I really would like to hear a good justification for this. Even if you hear this on a podcast, shoot me an email at michelle@kvor.com. Message me on Facebook, Michelle, or facebook.com/momforfreedom. I want to hear from any of the Central Committee members. These are the elected, the important elected of people, basically, in the state party who make vote on major decisions. And this Friday, if you didn't hear the first half hour, the state GOP is going to be voting on whether or not we should hold primaries next year. Why is that important? Because Colorado passed Proposition 108, which means that unaffiliated voters, that means you're not registered as anybody. You're independent. And you can come to a Republican primary and you can join the big tent, the big GOP tent, and pick our candidate. And our state party is looking like, from the article I read in the Denver Post, that the party is going to go ahead and allow the primaries to happen instead of, because in Proposition 108, the party has the option of saying, no, we won't vote in the we won't have a primary. We will go with the caucus system. The caucus system is where you and I, as registered GOP people, go and meet, and we hear from candidates, and you and I handpick the candidates that we want for the state lawmakers, that we want for governor, and other elected positions to represent the GOP person in that general election. So I want to hear from you. This is a serious problem because the GOP has turned us over to the masses. Not just the GOP, but Colorado in general voted for this. We have been turned over to the masses. We really do not have power as an individual, which we're supposed to in a constitutional republic, to pick our candidates. And this quiet little vote is going to take place on Friday. And I'm afraid that you are not going to be hearing about this because this is not something, well, the Denver Post did actually shared it, thankfully. But outside of that, I haven't heard a bit of it. And this is serious. So we're going to come back to that. I wanted to deviate here a little bit. Last week, I had a caller, Michael. He called in, and we were talking about the transgenders in the military. And Michael called in and supports transgenders in the military. He has a transgender son who's 18, who has struggled with gender identity since he was 4. I remember that. And Michael sounded very impassioned and very sincere about the idea that this struggle is a struggle about gender identity, not about sexuality. And he repeated that at least twice, maybe 3 times when we were on the air. And lo and behold, I come across a parenting guide from Planned Parenthood that covers that very topic, that very narrative. Planned Parenthood just published a parenting guide of all people, Planned Parenthood. And the question, the title of it is, "How do I talk with my preschooler about identity?" The whole premise of this article is exactly what Michael shared with us last week, that this issue is about gender identity, not necessarily about sexuality. Now, I'm not repeating that because I agree with it. I'm just repeating it because that's what he shared. And now this sounds like this is the new talking point from the left to keep you and me, you know, try to get you and me to validate this and affirm this disturbing choice. But so Planned Parenthood, I'm just going to read a little bit from it. Excerpts from the article: learn how to teach your kid that their gender doesn't limit them. Your little one is picking up messages about gender from the day they're born. Your preschooler may form rigid ideas about gender and what it means for them. Rigid ideas, meaning the parts you're born with don't necessarily rigidly keep you in that gender identity, okay? Most kids begin to identify strongly with a gender around age 3, says Planned Parenthood. That includes transgender and gender nonconforming people. And they go through all this advice. They're advising parents on how to talk to them about identity. The gist of the whole article is, let's confuse your kids so badly that if you have a daughter who wants baby doll toys, pink toys, talk to them. Did you learn? Here's the question. How do I know if my child is transgender or gender nonconforming? It says, if you catch your kid talking about gender, engage them in conversation. You may hear them making observations like, only girls wear pink, or telling you a preference like, I don't like playing with boys. Ask them questions about why they think that. If what they're saying is rooted in stereotypes, give them the right information. So stereotypes is a big, big undercurrent in this article. The advice that Planned Parenthood is giving parents is they don't want you to put your child in a box. So if you expand narrow gender boxes to include a range of other influences, you can ask yourselves questions. Think through when you pick a new toy or a book. So here's parenting advice from Planned Parenthood. When you pick a new toy or book for your child, or you sign your kid, it's very interesting to use the word kid. But when you sign your kid up for a new activity, ask yourself these questions to help you think through whether or not you're reinforcing gender stereotypes. Question 1. Would I feel comfortable with this choice if my kid wasn't the gender they are? Why or why not? So think about that question. If your kid isn't the gender they are, that's leftism at its most brilliant. Second question, does this choice expand or limit my kid's expectations of who they could grow up to be? Third question, does my kid generally like things like this already, or am I picking it just because of their gender? Give them choices as much as possible. Pay attention to what they're really into rather than what you think girls or boys are supposed to like. Keep in mind that gender stereotypes have potential to affect and limit boys just as much as girls. I'm not making this up. This is from the Planned Parenthood parenting guide. Jason's dying to say something.
I love the fact that they are telling you, give them choice, give them options, but whenever they choose something, you undermine them and question them. Why'd you choose that? What does that mean? If they like something, they are 4 years old. They're children.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, when did you get your sex talk? Wasn't when you were four, right? I assume
nope.
Not. Most of us are a little bit older.
Much older.
So why are they so fascinated with abusing children, in my opinion? Abusing children.
It is abuse.
By putting them through this kind of a rigorous, like, I don't even know. You're undermining their whole thought process when they're four.
Yeah. It's they say transgender means you identify with a different gender from the one you were assigned at birth. And you're right. Asking them questions to confuse them.
Yeah. Wait, you're purposely undermining them. If they choose to wear a pink dress, you ask them why. Why did you choose that? Well, because they liked it or whatever. But now you start putting doubt in their brain and you start creating that confusion.
Very powerful and very influential for a parent to do that.
Yeah. From a young age when they're four, three years old. They said 3 years old? Are you kidding
me? 3 years
old. No.
Yeah.
I wouldn't. As myself, if I go back to when I was three, I wouldn't trust myself with anything.
No.
I'm a three-year-old. You don't know.
And we've got schools that are forcing teachers to ask children what gender they want to be called, and parents can't be involved in that conversation. So if you're not doing this at home, the left is going to make sure that it's being done to your children by the time they get into preschool or kindergarten.
That there should be some line there.
There
should be some legal
line. Yeah, how do you legislate
that?
I
don't know how you would go about that, but that seems like it's crossing a boundary.
It is crossing a boundary. In that same vein, I was talking, you know, I referred back to my caller last week, and when Michael called, he told me that when Trump tweeted his new policy to ban transgenders from the military, that my caller told me that there were no military officers that were supportive of this, and my caller's in the military. And at the time, I didn't have the data to refute it, so, you know, I will always come back to things like that. It turns out that 17 flag rank officers who wrote to Obama voicing opposition to allowing transgenders in the military wrote a letter of thanks to to Donald Trump for his decision to reverse the policy. They wrote, "We write today to express our gratitude to you for making the extremely courageous decision to reverse President Obama's transgender social experiment." They said, "There may be an enormous amount of vitriol directed at you for making this policy correction, but please know that overturning this policy may have done more in the long term to save the culture and war fighting capacity of the U.S. military than perhaps any other military policy you will adopt as president." That's how strongly these 17 flag rank officers felt about what President Trump tweeted reversing Obama's transgender policy in the military.
And I love the fact that I did not hear a word about that. I heard all the hubbub last week about transgenders not being allowed in the military. But as soon as anyone comes out in agreement with that, silence.
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 Yeah. And then, you know, you heard it last week on my show, too.
Yeah.
I was told that no one had come out in support of it.
Yeah.
And, well, you
know. That's the narrative. They want to scare you. It feels like that they want to scare you. They want to put it in your head that no one agrees. So if you agree, that means you're a terrible person. Well, no. A lot more people agree with it than you realize.
A lot more.
They're just not telling you.
Paul E. Vallely, one of the 17 military members who signed the letter, told Breitbart that it's just not compatible with the mission of the military to have transgenders in the military. He said this social engineering conflicts with the military's need to be ready to go to battle to protect America. Interestingly enough, I found an article from September of 2015. The U.S. Marines tested all male squads against mixed gender squads, and the results for the mixed gender squads were very bad. Now, I also said on my show last week, I'm opposed to women being in combat in the military for just the most obvious reason that, generally speaking, I'm sure there are exceptions, but generally speaking, my gender cannot keep up physically with the guys.
Yeah.
And that's true in sports. That's why women play women in tennis,
men play men in tennis. We literally have lines in everything we do between men and women.
Yeah. So this report in 2015, I wanted to highlight this because I think it plays in strongly to this discussion about transgenders in the military. And it says that all male teams and crews outperformed the mixed gender crews on 93 out of 134 tasks. All male teams were universally faster in each tactical movement. On lethality, all male infantry squads had better accuracy compared to the gender integrated squads. And I know that my female counterparts out there are probably screaming. You know, I'm just telling you what the results are. It says there was a notable difference between genders for every individual weapon system, except for the probability of hit and near miss with the M4. It said the all-male infantry crew served weapons teams engaged targets quicker, registered more hits on target as compared to gender-integrated infantry crew, said that women Marines suffered more rates of injury, and just basic things like when negotiating wall obstacles, male Marines threw their packs to the top of the wall, whereas female Marines required regular assistance in getting their packs to the top. That's not something that can be accepted in a military situation. If we're hiking for pleasure up the mountains and we need help with a backpack, that's fine. This is life and death situation.
Yeah, when you're fighting the enemy, they're not going to take the time to say, oh, you need your backpack?
Help the ladies.
Sorry, yeah. We'll give you a little extra minute.
So my question is, going back to that, how does that affect transgenders? And you, Jason, had mentioned,
well, I think the biggest factor is how do you... Because they put them through a physical test.
Right.
And they base that test off of your sex, if you're male or female, because you have different capabilities. How would you test someone who's a transgender? If I have a male becoming a female, do I get tested as a male or a female because I'm a female now?
And if you're a male becoming a female, you would be taking female hormones, which...
Would make you weaker in some sense.
Yeah.
You're going to lose muscle mass. I equate it to being sick. When you have the flu, you don't feel well. You're not as physically capable. So, I mean, how would you test that?
Well, Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, he's retired. Boykin, you know his name. He's also the executive president of Family Research Council. He posted this on his Facebook page. He said, "To say that I'm pleased to see President Trump put a stop to this transgender madness in the military would be an understatement. It's another indicator to me that our new president is truly focused on military readiness. The transgender policy is designed... contributed nothing to that readiness. Once again, thank you for your focus on preserving military effectiveness, morale, and social cohesion of the United States Armed Forces." That's from retired Lieutenant General William Boykin, Jerry Boykin. So there you have it. It's the military widely supports this move. All right. So when we come back, we're going to talk about supposedly a transgender man in Portland gives birth to a son, and that's really a diss against the big media. And so much more. The professional cuddling industry is booming under Trump because we've got such hurting people in the world because of our president. All that and more when we come back.
Things big media won't tell you.
He's trying to undermine the media, trying to make up his own facts so that he can actually control exactly what people think. And that is our job.
Yeah. With Michelle Marin on AM 740 KVOR.
Okay, so it does what Trump has done for banning transgenders from the military. Turns out that the high-ranking military... overwhelmingly support this from what we're hearing. I have not heard anyone in the military yet say, oh, no, that's a bad idea. And we discovered that we were talking about how I think it parallels to having women in combat. If you're going to have transgenders in combat, you open a whole can of worms. And that's not what military readiness is about. So there was... in this same vein, there was something I just wanted to bring to your attention. This is why I do what I do. Big media, not only do I tell you what they won't tell you, but I tell you what they do tell you. And this is one example that is so disturbing. It's in the same vein as the gender discussion. Portland, KOMO News in Portland, reported, here's a headline. This is a headline from a Portland news station. The headline is, quote, "It's unique. Portland transgender man gives birth to a son." The headline in and of itself is all I really even care to talk about. We can, of course, the article pulls at your heartstrings and it romanticizes the fact that a man, let me just read it. "A Southeast Portland transgendered man and his husband are celebrating the arrival of their new child. Tristan Reese gave birth to Leo 2 weeks ago. Tristan carried him for 9 months and suffered a miscarriage the last time he tried getting pregnant." So this is a really touching story about how Tristan couldn't get pregnant, but then did. And it goes into the whole, they thought they missed their chance, but now believe everything happened for a reason. Oh, please. The whole story goes into this very romantic, sweet, tear-jerking story about how these two men finally gave birth to their son. I think this is repulsive on the part of media. Media is so complicit in the lies that the left is throwing in our face that every single person who sees the headline, every single person who sees the picture, there's a picture of two people on a sofa holding an infant, and they look like two men. Okay, one of them actually gave birth to the little baby in the picture. And the thing that bugs me, and the reason I do what I do, is because there are irresponsible people out there getting paid to report news to the general public, and they repeat these false narratives to mislead you. And every single person looking at this knows this was not a man. The only biological way you can deliver a child is if you were born a woman. And it's silly is a kind way to put it. It's silly to go around, you know, parodying, oh, man gives birth to a son. And I've seen these headlines more than once. Portland is not unique. All right. This Portland station is not unique at all. This I've seen it from Daily Mail. I've seen it from at least a half a dozen different outlets. So let's just break through it. Let's break through it. And I just wish that, how do you hold these people accountable? I'm not even obsessed with the couple. I feel very sad for these people that try to transform part of themselves into a different gender, but retain part of the old gender so that they can have children. That proves they're still a woman, because women are the ones who have this, you know, biological calling to have babies, not men. They don't have it. It's this weird thing that happens to women, not men. But what they do is disturbing, but that's not my issue. My issue is that big media just goes around and talks about it like this is fact. Hey, all of you out there, a man just gave birth to a son. Did you know that? Is it not infuriating to you as it is to me? It drives me up a wall. That's exactly why I do what I do. Big media does not want to tell you the truth. And in addition to not wanting to tell you the truth, they blatantly lie with silly, stupid headlines like this. And they take you and me for stupid. Are we supposed to say, oh, he did? That's just so cool. What a blessing. No, these poor people have made themselves reality freak shows, and media is treating them as, you know, normal society, and let's celebrate this. When we come back, we'll be talking to Anil Mathai about Proposition 108, and we'll be talking more about the GOP. We're going to be talking about professional cuddling that's going on in the world, and I've got to take a break right now. We'll be right back.
These are the things big media won't tell you with Michelle Marin on AM 740 KVOR.
All right. I'm here to tell you what big media won't. For the first half hour of the show, I shared a little bit about our state GOP and what they're planning to do or not do with our primary next year. We got Anil Mathai on the phone, and we're going to come to Anil in just a minute. He is a county chairman of the GOP here in Colorado. I'm going to let him educate us a little bit more. He's already told me that I gave a little bit of misinformation about when this vote takes place, and I'm going to let him tell you more about it. Anil is a fascinating individual and one that I think you need to get to know. So I'm going to give him that moment here in just a minute. But I want to go back to the topic we've been talking about in the most recent segment, and that's this. I was talking about how the media is despicable. I don't know how else to say it. They're despicable when they repeat narratives that aren't even, they're not even, you don't even have to do research to find out if they're lies. You don't, all you have to do is say, they're just lying and they're doing it because they take us for stupid. There was a Portland, go ahead, Jason.
Wait a minute, Michelle. You're telling me that the media promotes fake news? I've never heard this before.
This isn't even, this is, I don't have the right word for it. The headline that I'm referring to is it's one that KOMO News in Portland had, and the headline is, quote, "It's unique. Portland transgender man gives birth to son." It's got a photograph of two people on a sofa, two adults that look like men, and they're one of them's holding an infant, and one of those two people actually carried and gave birth to a son, but the Portland media wants you to believe that a man gave birth to a son. Every single person that reads this, sees this, hears this, knows it's a lie. And the human mind has this remarkably bad ability of rationalizing lies and saying, oh, yeah, a man gave birth to a baby? And that's what they're banking on. And I'm not saying, you know, most of us are like, oh my gosh, no, that was a woman who's trying to pull herself off as a man. Well, and
I love the headline doesn't even, because it says a man gives birth.
Yes.
And then the first line is a transgendered man. So they even qualify it in the first, like, bit of their story. So they know it's a lie. It's a headline.
They know it's a lie. And what I'm going to talk about. Freak shows. Over the break, I thought, I'm going to look up what a freak show is. There's a history of freak shows. Because what saddens me is these people have made themselves reality freak shows. I don't know what issues they're struggling with, and I'm not going to judge them for the issues they struggle with. It's
like reality television. They feed off of the publicity.
It is reality television.
That's what it is. It's a very sad element of our society that we've gone into.
It is very sad. Wikipedia says a freak show is an exhibition of biological rarities referred to as freaks of nature. Typical features would be physically unusual humans, such as those uncommonly large or small, those with both male and female secondary sexual characteristics, other extraordinary diseases and conditions, and performances that are expected to be shocking to the viewers. Shocking is the key word because shock factor gets attention. Heavily tattooed or pierced people have sometimes been seen in freak shows, as have attention-getting physical performers like fire-eating and sword-swallowing acts. In the mid-16th century, freak shows became popular pastimes in England. Deformities began to be treated as objects of interest and entertainment, and the crowds flocked to see them exhibited. And now in the 21st century, you can rephrase that to be deformities or confusions in people trying to change their gender began to be treated as objects of interest and entertainment, and big media brought the crowds to exhibit them. The sad thing is these folks are making themselves objects of interest and entertainment. If they don't want to be considered, you know, if they want to be considered normal, in my personal opinion, they should just live their lives and leave the rest of us alone and quit trying to shove it down our throats. But that's one person's opinion on the matter. So we're going to go back to the GOP discussion. We've got Anil Mathai with us on the phone. Hi, Anil. I'm Michelle. How you doing?
Hey, good evening, Michelle. How are you?
I am doing great. I appreciate you calling. I've known you for several years. I can't. Mm-hmm. It's been 4 or 5 or 6 years. Mm-hmm. And Anil is one of the most effective conservative activists in Colorado that you'll ever meet or know. Anil is unashamed, unafraid, and Anil knows what he believes in. If you want to know where the Constitution really means and how it applies to an issue, Anil is right there. Anil has worked himself up to county chair, a GOP county chair of which county?
Adams County.
Adams County. Okay. That's what I thought. I wasn't sure about that. And the guy who got this petition going is also from Adams County, right?
That's correct, yes.
Okay. I was trying to explain to the listeners what's going on with this Proposition 108, the option for the GOP to get us out of the primaries next year because of Ben's actions. Can you summarize it from your perspective as a county chair and tell my listener why this is so important to you and me as voting GOP here in Colorado?
Well, let me put it this way. Let me take it out of politics for a quick second, Michelle. It's like we are in a homeowners association, mm-hmm. okay? And our HOA, you know, if you're part of the neighborhood, you get to vote on the charters and other activities related to that neighborhood that you live in, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, someone from outside the neighborhood decides to have a quote citizen initiative funded by someone outside. And the initiative says that people from outside the neighborhood have the right to come into your HOA and vote on your many different items. They don't live in the neighborhood. The neighborhood would welcome them easily to the neighborhood. Come on in, move in, be part of our community. And it's very simple, but they are from the outside, and they've decided they don't want to invest in the neighborhood. They don't want anything, but they want to vote in how we run our community.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same exact direction here. You can do the same thing with private business. It's all of a sudden, I don't own stock in a company, but somehow I decided to have a citizen initiative, and I let the voters decide that we can now come into a private business and vote on things that we have nothing, you know, to own within that company, you know? So it's the same situation here. What has happened last year was there was a Prop 107, 108, and let's get to 108. It was funded by big money, specifically the CEO of a company called DaVita. And ironically, you know, and I understand the anger and the fury and of unaffiliated voters, who I believe many are former Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
The party has not been committed to the platform. That's just toilet paper, I think, to a lot of people in the platform, the establishment. The platform does not care. The party does not care about the Constitution. We saw almost 2 weeks ago, 7 quote Republican senators, after they told their voters that they were going to repeal Obamacare, voted against it. And so we're having more and more people leaving the party and becoming unaffiliated. But in that anger, what has happened, I believe, is a con game that has happened, and big money controls the issues. And so this whole thing about, oh, we'll give you your right to speak, is really mm-hmm. unconstitutional.
Mm-hmm.
And it's against the First Amendment's right of freedom of association. So again, imagine you live in the neighborhood and someone from outside your neighborhood can vote on what goes on in the neighborhood. And that's exactly what the problem is.
Okay.
The Republican Party is fully open to anybody. It's so simple. If you go to govotecolorado.com, you can register as a Republican. Come on in, fight the battles, discuss the issues, and we'll go forward with that. But what this really is for, certain segment of the Republican Party do not want conservatives to have their voice heard.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they do here is by allowing unaffiliates, you increase the pool and water down and eliminate conservative thought and positions. And basically the Republican Party starts to become worthless. It's just a tool. See, the party is just a tool to get onto the ballot. Okay. And so that's what's going to happen. Big money is involved. And they will. All they care about is getting on the ballot, controlling. And so once they get into government, it becomes big government and less freedom. And so that's why people have to understand. Take a step back and see exactly who was pushing all of this. And so the Republican Party has an opportunity here to clearly say that we are a private organization and we welcome everyone in. But you have to be a registered Republican to be part of this. But what's happening here is that the election took place, and 172,000 more voters voted for Prop 108 across the state. And so now we say, oh, the voters have spoken, and we can't, you know, disrespect them. And really, you know, the heat is on the Republican Party. It has not been on any other party, okay?
Right.
And so this is a whole con game to bring people, you know, to collapse a party and let this become, you know, tyrannical. I have always fought for the poor and the middle class. I've always educated people. I've just been involved in politics only in the last few years. And I know there's a lot of con games. There's a lot of lies, and people are angry and frustrated. And that's where we're at right now.
So give me the detail. Thank you. I love the homeowner's illustration. That mm-hmm. makes it crystal clear.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking of when I got involved in politics, the mm-hmm. mantra was, oh, we've got to have a big tent to defeat the left. We've got to have a mm-hmm. big tent. And I was always saying, no, mm-hmm. we don't. We want like-minded people in our tent, and then we'll mm-hmm. defeat them.
Mm-hmm.
So it strikes a chord with that. Explain what's going on in the state GOP. So Ben, let's see, his name is Ben Nicholas from your county.
Uh-huh.
It looks like he's forcing a vote amongst the state central committee. If
uh-huh.
I'm okay. Uh-huh. And they're going to vote to either hold the primary next year or not.
Mm-hmm.
And the state chairman, Jeff Hayes, has already come out and told the Denver Post that mm-hmm. He's pretty sure it's not going to pass anyway. Mm-hmm. And that he's going to hold the vote anyway because it's the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me the details of the vote. Tell me what in the world can my listeners do, if anything, to influence this?
So first of all, the proper thing to do in any type of as a party chairman, whether it's local or state, is to make sure that all the members of that organization are heard. And I think I commend Jeff Hayes for allowing this issue to be brought to the Central Committee. It has to be brought to the Central Committee. That's part of the wording that was in Prop 108, Section 1-4-702, that's in there. And in that wording, it says that the party can decide with at least 3/4, which is 75% of the total membership of the state central committee. If they get 75% or greater, they can opt out of the primary and have their convention assembly, you know, county convention and mm-hmm. state assembly, and then decide and pick their candidates through that process. That will strictly allow only registered Republicans to be involved in that process. There is some misnomer from last year. It seems like a lot of people said, well, we pay for caucus and we pay for county conventions and state conventions. No, private parties pay for those activities.
Okay.
The county elections comes in when the primary ballot gets mailed to people's houses. That's where the county costs are. So in the past, all the primaries would, all the parties would cover their own costs. It was always private. And then the party would pick their candidates and then bring it to the general public, which was through the primary ballot and the general election. And that's where the county clerks do come in, and that's where the taxpayers pay those bills. But now you're going to have this situation. It's just going to be across the board. County clerks have to take care of it. But in general, if it comes to the state convention, the central committee members will have to decide if they want to do one or the other. You know, and there is a sizable group that says, you know, the voters have spoken, the problem is we don't know who the voters were.
Right.
Okay, we have 100.
Every voter in Colorado has spoken.
No, the majority. If you go back to the abstract votes on the Secretary of State's website of the total ballot, you know, the issue and how many votes from each county,
mm-hmm.
Majority of the 50,000 votes of that 172 came from Denver alone. Now, Denver doesn't have any successful Republican candidate. Okay.
Okay.
It is a sanction. So I think, you know, there's an anger there because really there's no Republican real option. There's no candidates there. You know, other counties are suffering in the same situation, but we have principles we have to stand on, okay? Our Republican Party, it seems consistently in different states, are always afraid of what the Democrats are going to do or what the media says, and we never lead. We need leaders. A leader has a vision, and we move forward with that. And our conservative principles, our platform is great for everyone. It will help the poor, the middle class. It'll get all of us, you know, according to the Constitution, gives us our rights back. And that's how we move forward. But this is a reactive move by the state party and not opposing this and letting Republicans vote for Republicans, let the Democrats vote for the Democrats and others. And again, unaffiliates, I totally understand. But you have to understand something. The unaffiliated voluntarily removed themselves from the electoral process.
They do.
And if they want to start their own party, they can start their own party, but they don't. This is what they want. They don't. They're not going to be involved in the party. They're not going to donate to the party. They're not going to volunteer for the party, but they want to vote on the candidate for the party. And so, again, this is there are multiple attempts here. The one who funded this Prop 108, Michelle, has now, just a few months ago, registered as a Republican, ironically. Everyone knew what was going to happen.
Uh-huh.
And so now the pool is bigger for that individual, if that individual decides to run for governor, to go forward. There goes so he doesn't have to go through the convention assembly. He can get all a majority of votes by this new pool of voters that he said needed to have their voice heard.
This is very sinister.
Yeah, the listeners need to understand there are a lot of con games. There are a lot of liars out in politics, and people need to vet people. We don't do that as a Republican Party. If someone has a registered R behind their name, we say, oh, they're registered Republican.
Yeah.
You know, if Obama had an R behind their name, there's a sizable percentage of the party that says, we have to vote for him because he's a Republican.
You are exactly right. You are so right.
So as a party, what are we going to do? And so, again, I invite all the unaffiliates to come back and look at our platform. We have 11 principles as Republicans that will help our state and our nation move forward, our counties, our local areas move forward. We should never have to be ashamed of our party. But this is it's part of the shame process within the Republican community is the social conservative position.
And
I've always said, how could you be a fiscal conservative and a social liberal? That's oxymoronic because you require taxpayer money to fund social liberal issues. That increases government. It makes it bigger government. So this is where all the issues are coming out. And so I'm just wanting to let people know that wake up, understand, find out who funds everything. Go to Colorado Tracer. You can find out how much your neighbor donated to who and candidates.
Okay.
It's all in the system. But
question to you, Anil. Mm-hmm. It's been a long time since I've been in the party system. And, I used to organize folks, recruit folks to get involved in the party. And we made inroads years back, and it requires so much effort. And it's a behemoth force that is prepared and ready to silence the conservatives. That it takes more effort than most people realize to make a difference like you are. But what can my listeners do? I know you said get informed, find out where the voting is, but if the Central Committee, as it sounds like, doesn't, or they go ahead and go forward and allow primaries, what can just all my listeners do to affect this in the future?
Well, first of all, immediately, if you are a registered Republican within El Paso County or any county, contact your Central Committee members, okay, and petition to them and tell them, look, it is appropriate or important that we opt out of the primary and allow Republicans to vote for Republicans, okay?
Where do they find their Central Committee
members? It should be on your Central Committee list includes bonus members. Should be on your county party Republican page. If it's not, you're going to have to contact the Republican Party. If that doesn't work, you contact the state for the Red Book, which has a list of all the counties and all the people who are part of the Central Committee, okay?
Okay.
And that's how you get their information, number one. So petition moving forward to tell people, let us return our party back to the First Amendment, because it is unconstitutional what's happening.
Yeah.
And unless the challenge has to happen, and the state party won't do that. So if they could, and we did challenge it, I think we win in court, because the California Democrat Party did this about 20 years ago and won in their state. But that's number one. If this the Colorado Republican Party Central Committee decides to keep the primary, open primary, basically, with unaffiliated voters, I also tell people, look, don't lose hope. The party system could collapse. It could, whatever. It's going to happen. If you have no principles, no one works for a lie. No one works for, con games and things like that. But get involved at the local level. Look at your school board and city council races today and get involved. Study the Constitution. If you want to know what the Republicans actually stand for, look at our platform. Look at the first 11 statements are the principles of the Republican Party. Also, here's the biggest thing here. This is why politics gets me irritated sometimes. A lot of people just listen to people and what they say. Forget what people say. Find out what they have done. Who are they? Do they have a character? Do they have integrity? I've always told people, if I can cheat on my wife, I can cheat on you, okay, if I was in an election situation.
Mm-hmm.
Find out their background. Challenge them on their personal issues. Challenge them on things like that. Find out what they have done in the past. Don't just listen to rhetoric, because, again, 7 Republican senators 2 weeks ago told their voters they're going to vote to repeal Obamacare.
Yeah.
They've done this for years, okay? And when the vote comes down to reality, they lie to the voters.
I'm curious. So, I'm going to digress here a little, or to a little bit different subject. There's a lawyer in Virginia Beach who's suing the RNC over racketeering because we were all promised that Obamacare would be repealed. What do you think about that lawsuit?
You know what? In my emotional side would say I support it 100%. I do know that. I think that's going to go to court and get tossed out as frivolous. And that's kind of what's going to happen here. I mean, but it's something that's serious. The Republican voters are angry like never before. We don't have leadership. All we talk about is we just need to get Republicans elected. What is a Republican?
I've heard that for 10 years.
Yeah, and that's why that's why the unaffiliated numbers keep growing. They don't trust our party. And if you don't have trust in a relationship, Michelle, the relationship is dead.
Yes.
Okay? And so what I've been telling people is get educated. The power belongs to we the people.
Yep.
Get involved in your community political parties, county political parties, and change it. If it's corrupt, you change it. I've run into Christians, Michelle, that said, you know, well, politics is so dirty. And I said, what do you do with your shirt when it's dirty? Do you leave it outside the washing machine? No, you put it inside and wash it.
We've got to take ownership. This is a republic.
You have to. And what's happening is a lot of people are like, you know what, I just voted once every 4 years and that's good enough. And you got to be crazy. The most important elections are your local elections.
Uh-huh.
If you want to stop the corruption in Washington, you start in your own precinct.
Yep. Well, I agree. And what does it take to get this? Who has to file the lawsuit against Prop 108 if that was to happen?
It'll have to be the state party.
So if they won't, vote to eliminate the primaries, they're probably not going to vote to file a lawsuit.
That is correct.
All right, Anil, thank you so much for calling. Your insight is always wise.
I
would love to have you on the show again. And you have a wonderful evening, and I appreciate your wisdom and insight.
Hey, keep fighting for us. Keep fighting for conservatism. You're really an encouragement, and call me anytime.
Okay? Thanks, Anil. Have a great evening.
Okay. You too. Bye-bye.
All right, so that's Anil Mathai. He's saying what I've been saying for years. Politics is local. We have to get involved. I guess I need to start unearthing that message again, and I'll have to think about how bringing that back into my show. Jason's telling me we've got to go to break. That music means the same thing. We'll be right back talking more about the GOP and our schools. We've got social justice warriors ruining engineering. Let's find out more about that when we come back.
These are the things big media won't tell you.
He's trying to undermine the media, trying to make up his own facts so that he can actually control exactly what people think. And that is our job.
Yeah.
With Michelle Marin on AM 740 KVOR.
All right, I'm here to tell you what big media won't. And I don't know if you know this, but our GOP Senate is decided to meet. They've gone on August recess, which in and of itself is infuriating. Why are they on recess when nothing's happened? They're getting nothing done that they promised us to do. Obamacare is, you know, that's the big one. The wall, the tax reform. There's so much that they're not doing. They're getting paid a boatload of money with lots of perks, and they're just hoodwinking the American people.
They're being paid a salary to not work.
They are.
Constantly. If I remember right, they only worked 8 days in April?
There was something like that, yes.
It was close to... Are you kidding me? Yeah. I wish I had a job that I got paid a salary to only work 8 days out of a month.
$175,000 worth of salary.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's not like... You know what we need to do? We need to make sure they only get paid for the days they work. They would work every single day, and then magically things would start happening.
It would. Well, they've unanimously decided to meet pro forma over the remainder of the August recess. Guess what that does? Not only do they get nothing done, it prevents Trump from making recess appointments. Now, the interesting thing is the Republican-controlled Senate did the same thing when Obama was president to prevent him from appointing a Supreme Court justice after Scalia passed. But why are they doing it now with Trump?
Yeah.
Why?
The Republican president?
Yeah. Yeah. This is ridiculous nonsense. We can go into this on and on. I wanted you to know. And Trump, for all his misgivings, he does things that are just incredible that nobody will tell you about, and I'm going to tell you. You may have heard about this, the RAISE Act. This was a bill introduced by Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas and David Perdue of Georgia. Basically, it reformed our immigration, our legal immigration status. It reduces low-skilled immigration entry. It cuts back on our high influx of immigrants by half in about 10 years. It ends what's called the diversity lottery and chain migration. It prioritizes anyone seeking green cards for employment. And it asks basic questions of green card applicants regarding their skill set, self-sufficiency, and proficiency in English. And what do you think the left is saying about that? Oh, this is racist!
Of course, it's the key word, racist.
It's racist! It's the key word of the day. This is un-American. CNN's, what's his name? Golly, one of the CNN report, Acosta. He was at a White House briefing, and he said, "So you're saying that the Statue of Liberty does not represent what the country has always thought of as immigration coming into this country? Stephen, I'm sorry, but that sounds like some national park revisionism." That's from our favorite CNN. No credibility whatsoever. And he had no business putting his policy upon the White House press secretary at that time. But regardless, let's hear what some of the big media is saying about it. We've got, there's an MSNBC gal. Her name is Maria Teresa Kumar. She's an MSNBC contributor and Voto Latino CEO. And let's hear what she had to say about this immigration policy.
One of the most extraordinary things about his the leaked transcripts of his conversations with the president of Mexico and with the Australian PM is that he admitted in this January 27 call, he says, "I'm willing to say on the wall with Enrique Peña Nieto, I'm willing to say that we'll work it out," meaning who's going to pay for the wall. "But that means it will come out in the wash, and that's okay. But you cannot say anymore that the United States is going to pay for the wall. I'm just going to say we're going to work it out." He essentially was like, "It's the least important thing we're doing, but I need you to lie
throw
for me."
Throw me a bone.
Yes.
It's like, throw me a bone. Just help me. But this is the thing. Everything that Donald Trump is doing with the help of Jeff Sessions is basically trying to disenfranchise people of color communities quickly,
there
to dismantle the systems that we put in place.
Or at least say he's going to, because
this idea that all of a sudden we don't want affirmative action, for example, we are actually not preparing the leadership that we need in the next 25 years. We have a majority-minority group of Americans coming in less than 5 years, but we're not ready. This immigration policy is completely anti-American. It's elite. It actually is basically saying we're not asking any. The American people, we're no longer asking for the best, the brightest, the people that come here with $5 and all of a sudden create empires. We want the rich people.
Oh, yeah. Gosh. All right. Enough. Key words there. Sessions and Trump are being accused of disenfranchising people of color in communities, and that this is anti-American. I'm going to say this is the most pro-American thing we can do. We have so many anti-American people who have come over illegally that something has to be done to just stop the influx, period. And Trump made a decision with Cotton and Perdue to cut the legal immigration in half and make sure that these folks speak English. And that they're going to bring skill sets that contribute to the productivity of America for all of us, and that they can actually be self-sufficient. That's not un-American. What these people are suggesting is we need to lower the bar, make the lowest common denominator the guiding agenda. And we have to let everyone in, and if you don't, golly, you are a racist. This has nothing to do with race. Nothing whatsoever. Speaking English has absolutely nothing to do with race. Absolutely nothing. Self-sufficiency has nothing to do with race. And if you are suggesting that it does, then I would ask, who is the racist in that conversation? I say Kumar's the racist, and all these leftists that start declaring, you know, we've got to have, you know, why is English the big deal? Why is self-sufficiency? That's racist. This is just repeated lies. Interestingly enough, Fox News reports that this race, it's called RAISE, R-A-I-S-E, the RAISE Act. They're saying this proposal resembles policies in Australia, Austria, Canada, Denmark, Germany, Hong Kong, Japan, New Zealand, South Korea, and the United Kingdom. So we have policies like a whole bunch of other countries, but do you hear anyone calling them racist? I don't hear it. It's just that we're the bad guys and we're racist. No, that's not racist. This is, I'm going to borrow some of my input from Conservative Review's Chris Pandolfo. He analyzed this and kind of attacked the argument. I'm going to borrow from him. He says that James Madison makes this point in an essay titled Sovereignty. He says, in the case of naturalization, a new member is added to the social compact, not only without unanimous consent of the members, but by a majority of the governing body deriving its just powers from a majority of the individual parties to the social compact. I'm going to remember Anil was on the phone 15 minutes ago. He gave an example of the Homeowners Association and how the GOP is just fine. Our state GOP apparently is just fine with letting the word picture was, if you have a neighborhood association, with letting outside people vote on how we live our lives in our neighborhood instead of just allowing the homeowners vote on that. Same thing with immigration. Same, you could take this argument. This is kind of it's almost just a foundational basis of what Republicans are supposed to be, what conservatives and constitutionalists hold dear, and what the left hates. They hate that we have standards, that we want positive, productive, good, high quality of life for all Americans. They hate it. And it's the same exact parallel that Anil was talking about in the Homeowners Association and the GOP. And the left just like Kumar said, this is anti-American. It's as pro-American as it gets. I have a picture here in one of my articles where some protesters, one of their signs, they're protesting Trump's policy. The sign is, immigrants make America. Boy, that's a really large generalization. And I'm going to fight back with, you know, our constitutional ideals are what make America. And that's why immigrants flock here. Because we are about the individual. We are about empowering the individual. We are not about lowering everybody to a common denominator that is essentially communism, which is what the left is just trying to shove down our throats when they say ridiculous statements like this. There's another one. Do we have time for it, Jason, or should we? Okay. Representative Luis Gutierrez, he's a Democrat from Illinois. He went on MSNBC this morning and said pretty much the same thing. Let's hear him say it for himself.
I do want to ask you about the immigration issue, imposing new limits on legal immigration and this move to a merit-based system. I know that you issued a statement in response to that, reading in part, if you are brown, black, Asian, or anything other than English-speaking, highly trained technician, the Republican Party doesn't want you here. So are you calling yourself racist?
Oh, I think it's absolutely a racist proposal.
Of course.
There is no doubt in my mind. Look. If you take diversity visas, Alex, everybody knows that 90%, and they want to eliminate them, 90% of the diversity visas go to who? Black people
diversity
who live
visas?
In Africa, in sub-Saharan Africa, or in the Caribbean. And you're just going to eliminate it?
Okay.
You're going to tell me
okay.
that...
All right. That probably just gives you enough of the flavor. This is a Democrat representative from Illinois, Luis Gutierrez. And absolutely a racist proposal. What is a diversity visa? And I don't even, I'm going to have to go do my homework on that. But if it exists, where in the Constitution does it talk one iota about diversity? Nowhere. Absolutely nowhere. The left hates our Constitution because it's about the individual and anything they can do to shoot it down and make you and I, the individual, feel badly and like we're racist because we support pulling back on legal immigration because we want English-speaking, self-sufficient people coming into our country, not people who are going to come in and drain our tax base, drain our system, and never speak speak a stitch of English. Jason saying we got to go. We'll be right back.
The things big media won't tell you.
Trying to make up his own facts, and that is our job.
Yeah.
The Michelle Moran Show.
Okay, so Trump wants to pass the RAISE Act, which basically limits immigration over the next 10 years. It cuts it to about half. That's legal immigration. And he wants to bring in people who speak English, who are self-sufficient, and who are going to contribute to society. And we had a Democrat representative go on MSNBC this morning and talk about how the first thing that's going to go are diversity visas and on and on. This is racist. Everybody's crying racist on this. Jason looked up what a diversity visa is. He's going to educate you on what that is because I had not heard that yet.
So it is called the diversity visa, a.k.a. the green card lottery.
Okay.
And I just found that out right now. And what it does is it makes available 50,000 visas to countries who have low immigration. Doesn't matter the person. The minimum requirements are you have to complete high school or equivalent education.
Okay.
And that's it.
Okay.
We want to diversify our immigrants. So we don't take a lot of people from this country. So we'll just give you a whole bunch of green card, you know, diversity visas. And you can bring them all in. We need more people from your country.
Okay. Didn't say anything about English speaking or self-sufficient.
You have to be high school or equivalent.
There you go.
That's it.
So to me, that fits the, if they can speak English and they have that high school equivalency, they very well may be self-sufficient immigrants. And they may very well pass the test. And rending Gutierrez's accusation that this is racist because diversity visas will be cut a moot point.
I don't understand the link between English and race. Do you have to be white to speak English?
That's what they tell us.
That's what I'm hearing constantly. They're like, you have to speak English. That's racist. Well, the last time I checked, anybody can speak English. Doesn't matter what race you are.
That means we're racist.
I guess, yeah.
We're racist. So there's this thing called professional cuddling, and it's an industry, and it's booming since Trump got elected. And
is it what I think it is?
It is, and oh. I'm going to describe it to you. Breitbart reported on this. The professional cuddling industry has seen a considerable spike in business since Trump got elected. This is a report from Rolling Stone. One of the businesses is called the Cuddle Sanctuary. Kind of gives me the heebie jeebies.
Sanctuary. Okay, yeah. You just link all that together. Mm-hmm. That's pretty good.
Mm-hmm. The events were originally designed for people seeking human connection, autistic people, sexual abuse sufferers, individuals dealing with sexual dysfunction, or for people who are sexually abstinent. To each his own. It's not something I'm going to be looking for. But interestingly, there are several of these businesses. There's one called the Cuddle Sanctuary in Venice, California. There's Cuddlist, which the co-founder of Cuddlist had something to say about it. He says, the holiday season was the first time that since Trump won the election that a lot of people were seeing their family. People with different political views were going to be in the same place with relatives. That was the first hit of people having to confront it in a significant way. We saw an uptick around that. Another industry leader, Marsha Bajinski with Cuddle Party, talks about Trump's actions and history of sexual abuse allegations are driving this. She says, the work is actually political now. It used to be the case that you talked about cuddle parties because these are important skills for life. Everyone's navigating boundaries. And now we need to have boundaries with our government. How the F do you do that? How do you conceptualize having a leader who is essentially an abusive a-hole? Not my words. This is the CEO of Cuddle Party. And it goes on and on and on. But apparently, Trump has triggered our society into cuddle parties.
Cuddle parties. We need to be cuddled because of Trump.
Our culture is, I don't recognize it.
It's doomed.
Okay. I'm going to move over to the schools topic because 2 weeks ago we had Cynthia in and she was talking to us about the California Chancellor of Community Colleges who wants to eliminate algebra from curriculum because it's racist.
Oh, it's racist, yes.
Everything's racist.
It keeps the poor people down because poor people can't learn algebra,
that's right.
According to him.
And who's racist when they say that?
Yeah.
Him. So following up on that, there's a professor at Michigan State University. His name is Indrek Wickman. He's taught mechanical engineering for more than 30 years. And he says that engineering schools are increasingly focusing on hurting feelings and microaggressions to the exclusion of hard science. Go figure. Do you think that our professional careers are going to suffer from this nonsense? He says they have sought out the soft underbelly of engineering, where phrases such as diversity and different perspectives and racial gaps and unfairness and unequal outcomes make up the daily vocabulary. Can you imagine trying to teach engineering with all this nonsense floating around? Shut up. We're talking about engineering, people. Oh, that's racist. You're offending me, professor. Well, it turns out, then there's a Vanderbilt University professor. This is all recent news. These are both from August 4th, 2 days ago. This is not old news. This just keeps rolling in. Vanderbilt University professor Louis Leva, is complaining in an academic journal article that the field of mathematics is a white and heteronormatively masculinized space.
Just throw some more adjectives in there. Are you kidding me?
Again, who's the racist? Who is the racist when they make these comments? You are basically saying that anyone who's not white and heterosexual and masculine
can't be a mathematician.
Yep. Her article was titled Unpacking the Male Superiority Myth. And masculinization of mathematics at the intersection. She says that teacher expectations and cultural norms serve as gendering mechanisms that give rise to sex-based achievement differences. Citing the masculinization of mathematics, this myth is further perpetuated by teachers who point out instances of female underachievement. She says, asserting that doing so can contribute to the masculinization of the domain that unfairly holds students to men's higher levels of achievement. Jason, I don't know about you, but I'm really getting sick and tired of men getting bashed. You would think that as a woman, I would be tired of women. I am. But every time I turn around, men are getting bashed. White men. And I'm sick of it. It's worse than beating a dead horse. It's not even truth. There's not even truth to it.
Well, you have to stretch and stretch and stretch and... Any problem you have can be narrowed down to a white male. I guarantee it. If you look hard enough.
Any white male in your life, just blame him.
Yep. It's his fault.
It is. Here we go again. University of Wisconsin professor says poor whites. Oh, wow. This is going to get you going. Poor whites rely upon a national white hard worker mythology to deflect the blame for economic decline onto problem people. He says that, University of Wisconsin-Platteville sociology professor, it's always these sociology professors, Claudine M. Peed, claims in a recent article, the result is further entrenchment of hegemonic whiteness and the U.S. racial order. Oh, gosh, despite the lack of material payoff for economically marginalized white workers. Responding to critics who say that focusing only on whiteness, that's a disease now, isn't it?
You would think so. If you just came in reading this, you're like, man, these people are, whiteness is terrible.
Focusing only on a system, on whiteness as a system of power and privilege disregards the struggle of working class whites. She counters by quoting another researcher's assertion that whiteness in any study of race among white people is inherently at some level about domination. because the category's very existence is dependent on the continuation of white supremacy. Whiteness is a disease.
So Jason. Many thoughts
you
on
know,
that.
Aren't you thankful you're a minority?
You would think.
You don't have the whiteness disease. Oh, my goodness. The narratives that are being pushed on our youth are... Keep tuning in, my friends. I'm going to keep exposing this. Big media is not going to tell you this. What's going to happen is our public schools and our universities are churning out this stupidity and this nonsense. They're removing English and math requirements in the California state schools. I don't know if you knew that. Jarrett, Jason, tell me we got to go. Tune in next week, Sunday, 9 to 11 p.m. here on AM 740 KVOR. Have a wonderful week. This is Michelle Marin signing off.